Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be talking about in this episode originally came out on June 10th, 2009. Starting us off in DC is Red Robin number 1. This, too, is part of the Batman Reborn, I guess, story arc. I was thinking last week when we did Batman and Robin that was kind of the opening arc for that story, that title, but apparently this is just how they're branding all the new Batman stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, I didn't think it was a huge surprise who Red Robin was, because I thought, you know, going into Battle of the Cowl, Dick Grayson was pretty obviously, you know, the front runner for Batman. Given the art they'd shown for Robin, Damian seemed like the obvious bet. They're doing a Red Robin story. It's like, well, it's either going to be Jason Todd or Tim Drake. And given how long Tim Drake has had his own book, etc., to me, he seemed like a logical choice. Overall, I thought this was a really good story. I thought it had a solid beginning, middle, and end to this issue, and it was a really good start for this title. You know, while I wasn't completely blown away by this issue, it hooked me, you know, and enough so that I'm going to recommend this issue. And it, you know, unlike a lot of titles out there, this one seems to have a very clear direction that I think is firmly established in this issue, and I like that. This book, to me, has a clear identity. It's got a, this is what it's about and why it's different from the bazillion other Batman titles out there at DC right now. And as a first issue, in that respect, I thought it was highly successful. I'm still torn if they needed to be making all these changes they're doing and stuff with the Batman franchise, but hey, shake things up, maybe it'll get people interested, maybe it'll help sales, that's a good thing, I've got no problem with that. And while there are one or two places where the art here was maybe a little shaky or whatever, overall, you know, this delivered, and I liked it better than Batman and Robin, and we'll see how it stacks up compared to the other various new Batman titles coming out. But, you know, for me, I gave this a 4, good, solid, strong 4, you know. And again, I recommend people check out this title, particularly, you know, if they like any of the Robin characters, particularly the Tim Drake one. And this looks to be like a fun new title. What did you think?
For a dissenting opinion, I really disliked it a lot.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't like the art. I thought that Tim Drake / Wayne was acting extremely out of character from how he's been established to act in both the Robin and Teen Titans series in the past. There were a number of things in here that didn't ring good for me. They're like nitpicky things that were just irritating. You know, it starts out, Batman's dead, and I'm sure as hell not Robin. Yeah, well, if you're sure as hell not Robin, how about not calling yourself Red Robin, okay? Now let's come up with a different name if you want to distance yourself from Robin. You know, you got Robin in the name.
I did find that funny.
I don't know. I just, it didn't ring true for me. Just the way Tim was acting in this. I mean, okay, he's traumatized because Batman's dead, but I mean, this whole, I wasn't feeling it.
Well, you know, it's funny because he's throwing a couple of temper tantrums in here, and at first I had that kind of the same reaction as to Tim's always been kind of a very calm, collected, and with it kind of a character. And this did feel a little off, but then I was thinking, okay, he's just lost Batman as far as he knows.
But he does say that he's not dead, so he doesn't believe he's dead. And we know.
No, he doesn't believe. So. He knows he's not dead, but there comes a point where even if Batman's not dead, he's out of the picture and Tim's life has just, you know, been tossed upside down. As it kind of was when the Connor Kent Superboy died, or when the Bart Allen Flash died, or when Tim's father died, or when he thought Spoiler was dead.
And he didn't do this any of those times.
True, but I think there comes a point where, you know, this was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, well, he actually saw the bodies of all those other people who were dead, you know?
He saw Batman's body this time. There was a body to bury. You know, they also go into how, you know, he thinks Batman's alive, but other people are thinking he's just in denial because, well, they've seen the body kind of a thing. So I think they kind of addressed that. So on the one hand, I agree this feels a little out of character compared to how we've seen Tim before, but I was able to, once I stopped and thought about it, say, well, while I don't necessarily agree or like this aspect of it, I can see it being a legitimate take given the events he's gone through. Does that make sense?
I can see that someone would like it. I didn't.
No, that's fair.
So getting your shot on reviewing this book, because I'm not going to be back for issue number two. I am not buying this book.
Now, I will say that the art, because you were mentioning you were unimpressed with it, there were a couple of places where, you know, there were a couple of panels I thought were really good and a couple of panels I thought were really loose and needed a little more work.
Now I'll put this one on the artist, because I'm sure that the writer didn't say, draw this wrong. Go to the second story page after the two-page splash.
Okay.
He's catching the guy's burning hand.
Yeah.
How does he do that?
Does it with his right hand.
With the palm of his hand, right?
Yeah.
And how does the back of his hand end up burned on the pages down?
Didn't notice that, but you're right.
Come on.
And the funny thing is in the intervening page, he's using a modified bat grappler thing, which is really crude.
With his hand!
With that hand. Yeah.
That
well, and on the page with the hand in the sink, it's got three panels beneath that. The first panel, pretty well drawn. Nice, kind of clean style. The next two have a cruder, less refined feel to them.
Well, I mean, the top panel's like that, too, when you see his figure in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a lot of the pages, I'm unimpressed with the art. The story didn't hook me. I didn't like the characterization of Tim, and it just kind of added up. I mean, yeah, will I come back to this title at some point in the future? You know, chances are good, but for right now, it's not on my list. I gave it a 2.
Interesting. No, and I can see that. I mean, I see where you're coming from on that. Part of it for me is I also am a big fan of just the Robin character in general.
I am too. And I didn't think this was Robin, so that was my problem with it. I just thought that everything I liked about the Tim Drake character was not being demonstrated in this issue.
I also think that it'll be interesting in a year to see where this character's at, where this title's at, and how they position this title once Batman comes back. Because this whole thing is essentially his search for Bruce Wayne. And, you know, sooner or later, he's going to find him. So, that'll be interesting.
Keep me posted on how many times he insists that he's not Robin, as he calls himself Red Robin.
Well, the thing going back to that I found funny was he chose Red Robin because the name's already tainted. You know, while this costume's been used by half a dozen people in the mainstream DC universe, none have done it to any a public awareness or notoriety to really taint the name. So I found that kind of funny. Again, you know, I liked it. I see where you're coming from. Yeah.
So, help me save some cash.
If it gets good and I think you should be reading it, I will let you know.
But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's just a polar opposite to the Batman and Robin, I thought. But, you know, the same, I mean, I can see how, you know, there are a lot of things in Batman and Robin that didn't resonate with you that I loved. So, you know, it's just like different strokes, you know, different people are going to like different things.
But you bring up a good point that there are some very key differences between the two. And one of them, I think, is that this, while Tim is off in another, you know, mindset and characterization to a degree, style-wise, down-to-earth-wise, this had the same sort of a tone that Nightwing, Robin, and the Batman titles had kind of before. You know, they flipped out Batman and stuff.
Right.
Whereas Batman and Robin, they're very much trying to set a new direction, break from the status quo, the flying Batmobile, going back to the Wayne Tower Batcave, introducing some new characters. So there's a bit of a dichotomy there between those two titles.
Yeah, I'll be interested in some of the other Batman titles, because just reading these two, my opinion would be, if you want to read like only one Batman book and not have to read the entire Batman family of books, Batman and Robin's probably a good book to buy.
Yeah.
If you want one that's like kind of like tied in with the whole theme and is like the Batman family, then this might be more of a match for that. But we'll have to see once we get the Batman and the Streets of Gotham and
all the other ones, yeah.
Well, I mean, Detective's going to be Batwoman, right? So,
well, what's funny, because right now, Red Robin is kind of feeling like the X-Factor of the Batman titles, if you will. In so much as X-Factor in the Mutant titles is, you know, firmly part of the Mutant stuff, but also really on the outside edge of it. And Robin, Red Robin, since he's doing the globe-trotting, that kind of a thing, he's clearly part of the Batman franchise, but has a viable excuse not to get sucked into any major crossovers he doesn't want to get in, you know, that kind of a thing.
Just kind of like Nightwing used to be. So since Dick Grayson is Batman now, you know, this is kind of like filling the Nightwing slot,
yeah,
if you will, the Batman family. And, you know, Nightwing itself, I mean, it went through its not so good and its much better creative teams and story arcs over the course of its many issues. So, you know, I'm not writing it off forever. You know, the next creative team that comes along, I might very well enjoy, but Yost and Box, I'm going to give those guys a pass.
No, that's fair. I am curious if they're going to put Red Robin and try to get him back with the Teen Titans at some point and see how that goes. That could be an interesting story. But it also would be one that kind of doesn't really fit what they're doing in Red Robin, too.
Yeah, I kind of passed on the Teen Titans franchise after that death trap. So
can't say that I blame you on that. Shall we move on?
Sure. The Uncanny X-Men, number 511.
Now, I was a little behind on Uncanny X-Men, so I had to read 506, 507, 508, 509, 510, and 511.
Wow.
It was good that I did, though. I also caught up on X-Men Legacy. And one of the things I felt with Uncanny X-Men is this series has really been moving along in the last couple of issues. I felt like something was happening each issue and that it was reading like the ongoing adventures of the X-Men, not, you know, part one of a six-part arc or something like that. Now, I can't say the same thing about X-Men Legacy, because the entire batch of issues I read, and it was another five or six just like this, it was all dealing with Professor X and Gambit trying to you know, find Rogue and help her, you know, fix her fractured personality problems and stuff like that. It was all one story arc that just seemed to drag on. So I thought this was a much better title to be reading than X-Men Legacy. Now, that being said, I thought this was a decent issue, but not quite as good as some of those other ones I had just read last night.
And that was my feeling, and I'm glad you confirmed that, because I had been actually enjoying, as I recall, Uncanny X-Men, because I don't read Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
But this issue kind of stood out as not hitting me as positively as X-Men has hit me in other issues that I've read. And I think it was, you know, certain things, and you can maybe, if he's been doing this as heavy-handed in the other ones, because you've just read them, but, you know, when he introduces the characters and he's got, like, the little snarky little comment in the red, that was getting kind of irritating by about the third balloon that introduced, you know, somebody. And
He was doing that before, but it was getting snarkier and snarkier.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, that was not sitting well with me. And when you're having the little staccato balloons, you know, it's like in the graveyard, the fight scene that's two turns past the staple, where it's all kind of like Maddie, Deathstrike, Logan, Duck, Dunn, Die, No, Kill, You, rah, you know, it's like, it's all the text on two pages, and it's just like, nah, you know, it wasn't, that's just me. That's a personal thing. I think that this style, I can see someone really, really enjoying it. Just for me, it didn't hit me good. You know, it's a standard, you know, Greg Land art, and the same thing with Greg Land. I mean, some people really love Greg Land, and some people really dislike Greg Land. I will say that, you know, what was I watching? I was catching up on my Attack of the Show, Blair Butler things when I was on my last plane trip on my iPod. And, you know, one thing she was ranting about Greg Land is that, like, every woman he draws has essentially the same face. And I think she was talking about the 5'10 of Uncanny, actually, on the one I watched. But, you know, it's like if you look at the page with Emma Frost and I don't even know whoever the hell this woman is with the blonde hair and the black outfit.
Well, that was a problem I was having throughout the issue, and I was going to mention that because I mean I like Greg Land's art; it's pretty to look at, but it was getting hard to tell one blonde woman in an X-Men-ish uniform from another.
Even if you look at Psylocke, right? Well, she's got purple hair, so I know it's Psylocke, but she has the exact same face as Emma Frost. You know,
And
it's like,
Dazzler, and all these female villains,
yeah.
and yeah.
I mean, they all have the exact same face. I mean, it's a pretty face. You know, I like Land's art. It's nice to look at, but it really gets challenging when you've got a lot of female characters in an issue and they've all got the same face.
Well, I mean, for me, Dazzler was always looking like a generic, you know, female in an X-Men costume. And without the little diamond effects, you know, I couldn't tell it was her. And this was a real problem for me a previous issue or two back when, I guess, Dazzler and I'm guessing Northstar took Pixie out for drinks or whatever, and they come back and she's drunk or whatever. I'm like, okay, I can recognize Pixie, and there are two other people she's with. Now, who are they? And through the course of that scene, it's like, well, that must be Dazzler, and maybe that's Northstar? I can't tell. 'Cause he's got such generic facial features, but it's not one that says, oh, you know, that's Northstar, that's Cyclops. There's not that recognition factor.
Needs to work with a writer who's aware of that and, like, you know, like when you see a panel with like Cyclops and Colossus and Wolverine and Domino, okay, well, Domino's got a spot in her eye, so I can pick her out, and Cyclops has a visor, you know. It's like, you know, make sure that you're drawing a bunch of characters that have some kind of something on their face that or some kind of mask that lets them stand apart, because if you draw a bunch of ones that they all just have no mask, I'm having a hard time.
I don't think he's the best choice for this title because this title simply has too many characters. You know, and his characters, while they look good, they're hard to tell apart. Now, the funny thing is, this is one where there were parts where I think the Dodsons did some of the art.
Well, they definitely did those last two pages.
And it's like, man, talk about a noticeable difference. You know, you flip the page and then, you know. Then you can start telling the characters apart.
Well, looking through the rest of the issue, it looks pretty much like it's Greg Land and this other guy who's inking him, Jay Leiston. They seem to have done the whole beginning of the issue, and it's just the Dodsons who did that last two pages. The other thing that was interesting is this is a long issue. You know, people, you know, talking about how Marvel's been raising the price to $3.99 and giving out 22-page issues. By my count, there were 26 pages in this issue. And it was $2.99.
That's not too bad.
So, I mean, it was an extra long issue.
And, you know, by and large, it was a decent read, but I thought it fell flat compared to some of the previous issues, like we were talking about. I had enough problems, you know, recognizing some of the characters, particularly Dazzler, whether, you know, unless she had the little diamond effect or whatever, which is an obvious cheat, that kind of hampered the story for me. Then you go to the page past the staple, and they're trying to show just how powerful Dazzler is, and I'm thinking, wow, yuck.
Yeah.
That really did not work for me.
That's never been, well, I can't say I've not read every appearance of Dazzler, but her, like, frying somebody's face off with laser beams is not something that I've observed or known about her doing before, so I don't know if that's new.
I distinctly recall not seeing that before for her.
Yeah.
And was unimpressed seeing it here. But that's just me being queasy. But frankly, I don't think they needed to do that. You know, that was over the top and for me a serious detraction for the book. You know, seeing Psylocke come back I thought was cool, but this whole bit with it fell kind of flat given the setup in the previous issues. I was expecting her to actually, I don't know, do a little bit more or something. And those two pages by the Dodsons really fell flat for me because, you know, it's all going on the how the X-Men are keeping secrets from one another. And the Beast is calling out Cyclops on this for some reason in the middle of the night, you know, in their bedroom type thing. It's like, okay, that seems odd. And then saying, well, we'll talk about this when I'm back from my mission. And I'm like, well, you're not saying what your mission is. Aren't you keeping secrets? And that just felt, I mean, it's clearly trying to set up the next story arc and all that kind of a thing. It just felt somewhat ironic and not in a good way.
Well, I mean, it looks like they're going to really switch gears with this next story arc, with the Beast going back in time with the X Club or whatever he's calling it, the X Club, right?
Yeah.
So I'll stick around for that. I'm interested to see how that's going to go. If they had not really switched gears and done that, I don't know. I might have been done with this at this point.
I gave this a 3. I thought it was an acceptable comic. Having just read the previous 5 issues, some of those I would have definitely given a 4 to. Might have even been one that could have cracked into a 5. But particularly compared to those issues, I thought this was a little weak. I do recommend this title, Head and Shoulders over X-Men Legacy, just because more seems to happen in an average issue. But I think there's room for improvement on the title.
I also gave it a 3. And again, similar to you, I would have given, as from my recollection of the previous 4 or 5 issues, there were several of those that I would have given a 4 to. This one just fell a bit flatter. The conclusion of the story was a little rushed / unclear. You know, Land's art, while I normally like it, was not helping me for the reasons you mentioned. Too many characters. I mean, that's one of the benefits of, like, Sojourn, for instance. Well, there's one blonde chick in Sojourn, you know, so it's like you can always tell who she was.
Yeah, yeah. You know, put him on a title with a very finite cast of very distinctly different-looking individuals that can't be confused, and it works out fine.
Maybe we should send him some
better photo reference.
Different, yes. You know, because there are a lot of different-looking people in the world, right? So, I mean, if you just send him a few more pictures, maybe he can draw a different kind of female face. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, and the funny thing is that would solve the problem if you just had better photo reference and used different photo reference for different characters. Essentially cast the characters.
Yeah, it's like maybe he has like come up with a standard non-totally swiped face. Because if he uses some other photo reference, someone's going to say, hey, that looks like this model who was in one...
Yeah.
Italian lipstick ad 3 years ago or something. You know, it's like always someone on the internet pulls out that one picture.
Which is kind of funny, but yeah.
Anyway. I want to move on to our last title, which is The Unknown from Boom Studios by Mark Waid and Mink Oosterveer.
Who was that writer again?
Mark Waid.
That's better. You said Wayne
or,
before.
Oh, Mark Wayne. It's Tim Wayne and Mark Wayne. Or Mink Wade, we'll call him from now on. Mink Oosterveer. At least I pronounced Mink Oosterveer somewhat correctly. I like just saying Mink Oosterveer. So I like this issue. I'm liking this series in general. It's kind of got a different style. It's a unique, you know, kind of a style. I mean, it's kind of standard kind of comic book style. It's got a certain flair to it that, you know, Mink has got. It's a little reminiscent of the art that I see in Lock and Key by Joe Kelly's the writer on that. I forget who the artist is over there. It's got that kind of a vibe to it, but I like it in general. I mean, it tells the story in a pretty clear fashion. This story seems to be building to something. I you know, it's a 4-issue limited series, so we're on issue 2 here, and it is moving along. We've got the main character. What's her name? Catherine Allingham?
Yeah, Catherine.
You know, she's supposed to be like the world's greatest detective, and she finds out she has a terminal disease, so she wants to discover the unknown, what happens after you die. Since she sees the clock ticking on her own life, she wants to solve that mystery of, you know, what's going to happen next. And it, you know, kind of has some little references to some of these paranormal things, you know, where they're like, talk about the, you know, 3/4 of an ounce, or I think they also say 28 grams that a soul is supposed to weigh, and you know, Wade throws in his own little debunking of that. And I thought it was nicely researched, and in general, I liked the story.
I thought this issue, you know, started by getting us right back into the story without, you know, exposition or whatever. It flowed nicely from where it was at. In terms of, if you read this in a trade, I don't think it would be, oh, okay, here was the issue break kind of a thing. But, you know, it gets us right back into the story, and it just keeps rolling from there. And it ends on a nice page, you know, ending kind of a thing that puts a good spin on it. So it's got a nice, you know, closing beat, which I appreciated. And, you know, I'm really liking both Catherine and Doyle, the sidekick, you know, assistant, if you will. And, I mean, they're fun characters to watch, and I think this would make for a really great movie if these two characters were cast well. And Wade is just totally delivering on the story here. The art by Mink Oosterveer, I think, really fits the story. And, you know, I liked the first issue. I probably would have given it, you know, maybe a 4 or whatever. But, you know, it was good, but I wasn't totally sold. This one, I'm giving a 5 to. I enjoyed this, you know, from page 1 to the last page. It kept me engaged, kept me hooked, and it's a really fun, different kind of a story. And I like you were saying, just kind of how well-researched it is. And if you go to when they're on the train and they sit down and Catherine pulls out a book to read, the book is Sherlock Holmes Was Wrong. You know, I saw that and it's like, okay, hang on. Let me pull up Amazon real quick. Turns out it's a real book about a writer who's basically reopens the case of the Hounds of the Baskervilles and shows how Holmes was wrong. And it's like, okay, that's kind of funny. I'll have a link to that book in the show notes. But I mean, that to me, kind of an Easter egg thing. It doesn't totally factor into the story, but it's a nice kind of a characterization bit. And that kind of subtlety and depth and stuff, you know, I think Wade can be really good at. And what he's doing here is, you know, I think a notch above a lot of the other books out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm glad to see Wade doing things like Potter's Field, doing things like Unknown, and Irredeemable for that matter, although that's more, you know, standard superhero type stuff. But getting some new properties out there that are different, that are interesting, and, you know, I'd like to see him have a great deal of success with this. Because I thought it was really, really good, and one I'd really recommend people go buy this series. Not go wait for the trade, go buy this series.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, in general, I like reading periodicals as opposed to trades anyway. But it's a top-of-the-stack kind of book. I liked it. I gave it a 4, a high 4, but I thoroughly enjoyed the issue. Yeah, I liked the first issue a lot. I think he did a good job of setting up the characters and the motivations, and those kind of followed along. He had things that got set up in the last issue that carried along into this one.
Where I think this issue had the advantage, though, is since he'd already done that groundwork, in this issue we could really just kind of get comfortable with these characters and watch them interact.
Right.
And there's a really good chemistry between the two. And to me, that's what's making the book really, you know, fire on all cylinders.
I'll be interested to see how he wraps it.
Yeah, that will be interesting.
Because this is supposed to be kind of like, you know, very real world kind of, you know, detective, or almost, I get the impression, I don't know if he said it straight out, but I mean, she kind of like debunks a lot of the supernatural stuff, right? With the exception of how she's looking for the existence of the soul and the afterlife and stuff. But this Golem character, I mean, he had some relatively interesting powers here that I'll be interested to see how that gets explained, or if it gets explained.
Well, it's certainly looking like she's either having major hallucinations and is an unreliable narrator, or there is a supernatural element in this world.
Right.
Be curious to see which one it goes with, and really how it wraps up in terms of will the character be around that he can do more with the character? Because, you know, I'd kind of like for that to be an option.
I'm just looking at how this guy turned this crowbar to dust, and Doyle was the one who was witnessing that, so I think it would, unless Doyle's having hallucinations too.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Doyle was there for a lot of this. He's been established as a reliable narrator, particularly that scene in the train car. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, you know, maybe there is some supernatural stuff going on here, which is fine, you know, in the context of the world. And that's what made it interesting, is how, you know, something that had potentially been her hallucination, then Doyle seeing it now.
Yeah.
So I just want to see how Wade, where Wade goes with that. And that's, you know, that's kind of one of the downsides to the monthly one, because that could go a bunch of different directions, you know. It's like, kind of like at the end of the series, you know, the series could really pay off well, be a five. I could not like it, and it could be lower, but we'll see.
Yeah. As an issue for me, this is certainly five, but I agree, it's all going to come down for the series as to the payoff at the end. Now, with Wade, I know we'll get payoff. It's just a question of is it payoff we like or not. So, yeah.
In general, I mean, Wade's got a good track record there. I mean, we've got a pretty decent chance of it coming out in a positive way, just from my experience with Wade.
I'd be hard pressed to name anything he's written in the last 10, 20 years that I thought had a really, you know, crappy ending or anything of the sort. Because he's, like you said, he's got a good track record.
Any other books? I read the Spider-Man that came out.
These were the only ones I had a chance to read this week.
Read Spider-Man.
I will. You know, I just had a busy week and I had, you know.
I know you will. I'm just saying, read Spider-Man. The last panel is one of those, how's he going to get out of that one kind of panels.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get quite a bit of reading done this week. I had a large shipment this time.
You're starting to get some of your back issues, I would imagine.
I got 90 comics this week.
Yikes!
So, yeah, some of these are back issues. Some of these are obviously quite a few of these are new. I've been doing a lot of bookkeeping, just trying to keep track of, okay, which titles can I now read because I've got all the issues I was missing and can plow through. Now, I got a drawer box downstairs divided into two sections. Things I'm still waiting on, you know, an issue or two, and others, it's like, okay, I can plow through this as soon as I get the time. And I made some progress last weekend, but between, you know, doing the Mayo report on the trade section with Chris the other night, editing that, and then working late a night or two, I was doing good to read the issues that we needed for this. But hopefully this weekend I'll get through quite a bit. How about you? How big was your shipment?
Got 27 comics and a Marvel Masterworks and three or five busts, depending on how you count them.
Let me guess. This was the AIM 3-pack?
There's the Hydra Agent 3-pack.
Oh, I thought you'd already gotten the Hydra stuff.
No, I got the AIM guys. The AIM guys came in a 2-pack.
You were
There's
mentioning
more.
last week how, or the week before, how the China shop apparently got their green paint.
Yeah, well, that's because I had them on my shipping list.
Okay, I thought you had gotten them. My mistake.
No. So the three I got this week were all green. It was the Super Adaptoid, Titanium Man, and the three Hydra agents. They were just on my shipping list, so I knew they were coming
Got it.
last
Got
week.
it. Okay. Cool.
And that Super Adaptoid's big too, but realistically, the Super Adaptoid I guess it is to scale to the other busts, because Super Adaptoid was always like 12 foot tall or something, right? So.
Yeah, he was huge. So definitely, I could see that would be a big bust.
Which is a problem, because I can't fit it up on the one place where I was going to put it, because he's too big. He's also got those big yellow jacket wings or something coming off the back of him that I forgot about.
I got to imagine you're starting to run out of space for those things.
Yeah, well, I'm going to end up pulling down some action figures. So some of these action figure shelves are going to give way to be busts. It'll be the busts. They take precedence over the action figures.
That makes a certain amount of sense.
And one day, Steven will move out. Although Janine does not want him to ever move out. But the day will come when he will get a job, meet a girl, move out, and then Dad's action figure annex room will come into being.
Uh-huh. Sooner or later, that will happen, I'm sure.
Hang around as long as you want, Steven.
But the minute you're out, he's taking the room.
When you're gone, I've got dibs on that room.
Anything else? We're pretty much done.
I think that does it.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Batman Streets of Gotham number 1 from DC, The Invincible Iron Man number 14 from Marvel, and Project Superpowers chapter 2 number 0 from Dynamite.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.